Hello, friends. It's us, your boys. From what page are you on? This is our last episode before we take a little break for the summer. This voice speaking to you now is Bethany Rutter. Who am I here with?
Me. This voice. Alice Slater.
That is you.
I never really feel like I've got the hang of the intro.
Interesting. Do you feel like I've got the hang of the intro?
Yeah, you smash it every time and then I always do something a little bit weird.
Little goof.
I just do a little panic. I feel like I have to have a little panic and then I can settle down into the episode.
Maybe you should do the intro in future because then you won't be wondering like when to say your name or things like that. Like,
try it out.
Yeah. Next time. After the break, we'll do the old switcheroo. So this last episode before the summer, we thought we would do a little kind of mid-year roundup, but not only of books that have come out this year. This is just our favourite things we have read so far this year, whether that's old, new, and in one case, not yet released. You know, just in general, maybe to give you a little idea of what we're into that we don't read for the pod always, but also if you're going on holiday and you're thinking, what shall I pack? Any cool books I should buy? Maybe you will find inspiration in these future minutes of your life. Anything you want to add? Any disclaimers, Alice? Any additional info?
No.
Good.
No, that was perfect.
Thank you. So, let's begin with one of our faves of this year.
I would say this is what in my top three of the year.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Which is
Lanny by Max Porter.
Yeah.
Fuck, it's just so good.
It works so well. What a perfect idea. Executed perfectly.
It's just so good. Do you want a nutshell, Lanny?
So Lanny is told from the point of view of Lanny's mum, Lanny's dad, and a guy in the village called Pete. Lanny lives with his parents in this village outside of London. He's kind of weird. He's a kid, he's kind of weird.
He's a strange little fellow.
Yeah, very kind of creative and in his own little
world.
Very
gentle.
Yes. And halfway-ish through the book, Lanny goes missing. And that's what the book is about. It's about Lanny, the village, England, Englishness, outsiderness. Yeah, that's...
It, like, makes my heart hurt to think about it, because I love it so much.
Yeah, me too.
And, like, I don't know if we've mentioned this on the pod before, so, like, forgive me if I sound like I'm just showing off, but we were blessed to hear Max Porter reading extracts from it at the Faber Spring Party. And, I mean, you could hear a pin drop at the end of it. Like, everyone in the room was just completely captivated. It's so kind of creative and experimental, both in its form and the way that it is, the typography of the book.
Like, the way it looks incredible. Yeah. And he just read it so well. I was so sold on this. I'd have probably read it anyway, but this just made me, like, want to read it so much. And
But, you know, I wouldn't have snapped to it.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I really enjoyed Grief is a Thing with Feathers, is the thing.
Yeah.
Feathers, whatever it is. I really enjoyed it, and I sold a fuckload of it at Waterstones. Like, it was a hit. But it didn't, like, move me so much that, you know, I would necessarily have Lanny pre-ordered.
Yeah, no way.
I would have just waited till, you know, till it popped up. Till I had the time. And after that reading, I read it that week. I couldn't wait. And, it gives me, like, heart flutters.
And it's a book, you know, obviously I couldn't write most books, but you just read that and you're like, I could never write that book. That's the product of, like, a truly genius mind. It was amazing.
There is a kind of folklorishness to it, which I feel is, like, happening a lot right now. Like, we have Midsommar coming out in the cinema, and then we have Water Shall Refuse Them. Like, that kind of folklore and kind of...
Was kind of, you know, I mean, less so with Midsommar because it's an American film set in Sweden, but...
And I was going to say British folklore, and I was like, actually, that Midsommar is
and
not...
And obviously the rest of them are partially, like, how do we deal with the concept of Britishness? What is, like, original Britishness? How does that manifest itself now? So I think it's a really interesting way of thinking about whatever mess we're in now.
But I love this kind of folklore being applied in a way that isn't twee.
Yeah, it's weird and, like, dangerous
and gross.
Yeah,
and
threatening and horrible. And
I think also, like, in Lanny, like, so one of the kind of regular features is these, like, scraps of conversation. And you see, it's, like, feels very real. There's, like, that kind of horrible kind of small town British racism in there, and, like, people saying quite crass things, and it's just not what you would necessarily expect.
Yeah.
If you didn't, you know, have prior warning. It just made it feel incredibly real and incredibly well realised.
So if you haven't read Lani yet, 100%, that is a real What Page Pod fave.
Unexpected What Page Pod fave.
Yeah, because it isn't about, like,
it's not
two gals having fun, doing naughty things, having beef with each other. Yeah.
What's number two on our shared list?
So on our shared list of faves, and the shared list of faves are two things that have come out this year, one's out next year. Just FYI. So that is The Red Word by Sarah Henstra, which obviously we would, instead of freestyling extensively about it now, we would say just go back and listen to the episode that we did about that, which was about two episodes ago, where we very unfavourably compared it to another book that was out this year.
Episode title, Seeing Red.
Exactly. So yeah, I'd say
book of the year for me,
yeah,
so far.
Definitely front runner for book of the year.
And I feel like Lani is the kind of book that you could read in a pub over 3 hours. Like,
in
a couple of little
English
pints.
Country garden.
Exactly. Like, poolside, done in a day. The Red Word is, like, a slightly thicker... That's more, like, for your flight.
Yeah.
You know? That's, like, 10 hours, and I want to be absolutely gripped.
Yeah.
From start to finish.
And you will be. Our third shared fave?
Okay, so we weren't going to include this, because we don't normally talk about books before they come out, because we know that frustrates people. But we want this to be an honest list. This is just what we have literally read in the last 6 months.
That we have truly loved.
It's a book called My Dark Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell that you may recognise. The proofs have been everywhere. It has kind of a ginger plait on the cover, on like a kind of peach background. It is just incredible. It's not out till like January 2020. But just keep your eyes peeled, add it to your wish lists, save it in your on your Instagram, you know, save tab, which I use like Pinterest. I love it.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Pinterest,
mad about it,
if you will.
Yeah.
Just
don't miss it. Keep an eye out.
You won't be able to miss it. It's gonna be
It will be
huge.
One of the biggest books of the year. I have absolutely no doubt. I thought it was incredible.
And in a nutshell, not because we will probably do an episode about it.
We will do an episode, but in a nutshell, it is about a woman reflecting on an affair she had when she was 15 with her English teacher.
When she was at boarding school.
Yeah. And it's basically a kind of hashtag Me Too, looking at abusive relationships with power imbalances, and to what degree the autonomy of the victim in telling their own story, like,
determines how it should be perceived by other people. Yeah, it's about, like, the grey area of what happens if what we would perceive to be the victim doesn't consider themselves to be a victim.
Yes.
Which I think is such an interesting, like, gnarly part.
It's challenging. Yeah. It is fucking challenging. And it is a difficult thing to pass. And therefore, I think quite often we just don't. It's great.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about it properly.
It is
mainly because if we do an episode on it, I will have to reread it, because by then
it'll be like 6-7 months down the line.
Yeah. And I'm already excited to revisit that, because I just think on a line level her prose is just incredible.
Incredible. Mm. Yeah.
Love it.
So,
okay.
Now we're moving on. We made a list of 10 books each, and it happened that three of those were the same, so that leaves each of us with 7 that we haven't even mentioned yet. So that's pretty cool. That means you're going to come home with loads of recommendations. Hit me.
Okay, so mine are in absolutely no order. They're
same.
Just as I came across them. So number one on my personal list was a reread, which I reread for the pod, so I don't need to go into it in depth, but it's called A Visit from the Goon Squad by Jennifer Egan. This was my second reading of this book. The first time I read it was like 2010-ish, 2011. It is a series of interconnected short stories that revolve around two characters. Questionable, really, how many characters it actually revolves around. Spans about 40 years in LA, predominantly in the music industry. And it's an absolute banger.
It's so good.
It's an absolute peach. I love it so much. It was such a joy to revisit it.
It's so creative and formally interesting.
And also kind of like nothing else. There are so many books which contain interconnected short stories, but I don't feel anyone else has achieved what Jennifer Egan achieves in A Visit from the Green Squad.
Agree. So my first personal pick is actually one of the first books I read this year. It's a bit of a random choice.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like a lot of people listening will not have read it, so a very good reason to include it, which is The Moth Diaries by Rachel Klein, which I borrowed from none other than...
me, Alice Slater!
Exactly.
God, I love that book so much.
Which is set in a boarding school. Again, we love boarding schools this episode. It's set in a boarding school about an unnamed narrator who becomes convinced that a new girl at the school is a vampire. That's what it's about. That's the plot. But it's just not... it's not what it sounds like. You know, it's... I don't know. It's not kind of titillating Twilight
Diaries. No, well, like, the first page is a diary entry saying, like... my therapist suggested I revisit the diaries of my school days to try and get a new perspective on what happened. And, like, it's all about whether or not the girl was really a vampire.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's just so good.
It's so good. It's just so gripping. It's beautiful. Like, the writing is so beautiful. It's so rich and, it, you know, I loved it. So, yeah, that's why that is... one of my top picks of the year.
I'm so happy you read that.
I love it.
And I feel like, so for me, it's a good, like, autumn book.
Yes, totally. Know? It's a good back-to-school book.
Cozy, campus.
Yeah. I feel like it's quite off-brand for me as well, so I'm very happy to have put it on my list.
I would describe that as, like, very much my brand.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I'm very particular. I was saying this the other day to someone over a cup of tea, that I really love vampires and ghosts and horror and folklore. But I'm so particular about how I want that in my fiction.
Yeah, how that's
executed.
I'm not
keen to just read widely and deeply. I really just only want...
the best of the best.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've got fine taste.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's true.
But like with movies, I'll watch any old shit horror movie. Yeah. As long as it's not crossing, like, ethical boundaries that I have, then I'll watch anything.
Yeah.
Books, I'm just more particular. Anyway, my number two is, again, another one that we've already discussed... in fact, I'm going to do two in a row because they're both in the same episode. First of all, new book for this year, Salt Slow by Julia Armfield. Short story collection that just, if you have never really read short stories before and don't know where to start with this. Every single one's a banger. You can't go wrong. I love its playfulness. I love its absurdness. I love its grossness. And we talked about that in an episode called...
A Brief Darkness, maybe? Is that what I called it? It was the... yeah.
Yeah, it's a short story episode, about 4 or 5 episodes ago. Yeah. And in that episode, we also talk about another of my top 10 of the year so far, also a short story collection, called Her Body and Other Parties by Carmen Maria Machado. So yeah, for our thoughts on those, check out the app. But I just love my short stories. I read an abundance of them.
You're a fiend. You're a fiend for the short stories.
But I like to be surprised, most of all. I like to feel like I'm reading something... like, so incredibly smart and strange that I just can't believe that it's just come from someone's brain and it's not, like, fact, you know? Like, it's not just biography.
Yeah.
And obviously with these, unless Julia does have a stepsister that's a wolf, these are...
indeed fiction.
Indeed fiction.
Yeah, no, they're both truly banging. So my next pick is another, like, kind of weird one, which I read... I went on honeymoon in January. I went to Sri Lanka, which is obviously a very long way away, and I could not sleep at first because of the time difference, and air conditioning had made me incredibly dehydrated, and I was just like a mess on the first night that I was there. And so I woke up and I looked at my Kindle and I thought, what's on my Kindle that will entertain me in this dark room? And I started reading 13 by Steve Kavanagh, which is such a good thriller. And, you know, we, off the record, when we are not recording the pod, I feel like we kind of talk about thrillers a lot, but it's often about how bored we are now. Like, how the golden age of the thriller is kind of over, how there is no quality control anymore, how there has really not been... anything super memorable that has come along for a long time. You know, I generally like as well the kind of domestic noir flavour of thriller.
True psychological thrillers.
Yeah.
No procedural nonsense for me.
So this is, it is about a lawyer who is involved in a case. I don't even know how to explain it without, like...
Saying too much,
but it is just a perfect thriller from start to finish. It is just absurdly fun.
What are the themes?
So basically the tagline of the book is something like, he's on trial, someone, you know, blah, blah, blah is on trial for murder, but the killer is on the jury.
Oh, it's that one. Yeah, yeah, got ya.
It's just, from start to finish, it is a wild, wild, wild ride. So it's so fun.
I trust your taste in thrillers to the end of time. I so rarely read thrillers written by men, that I think that's why. If this had been written by a woman when it came out, I would have just snapped it up. But because it was written by a man, not that, you know...
Men aren't allowed, but...
Nothing to do with, like, men not being allowed to read thrillers. It's just I do tend to read majority books by women. But now I will definitely check it out.
It's just so fun. Like, it was the perfect thing for me to, like, get into while I couldn't sleep, because it just was...
Sometimes that's just what you want, though. Like, and I do tend to read most of the thrillers that I read, although I've had a really bad run, which is why none of them are on this list. But I love to read a thriller on my phone on the Kindle app late at night.
Yeah. Beautiful. I mean, you will, when you start reading this, you're just going to want to keep reading it. It's so, so good. So, yeah. I feel like this list, you know, if you are going to use this for, like, potential holiday reading material, you cannot do better for a gripping poolside read than 13 by Steve Kavanagh. Alice.
Next for me is another one that I'm not really going to talk about, but we haven't done an episode yet, but we are recording a live episode. By the time you hear this, it may even be live.
Maybe.
Would it be? No, it wouldn't be. Whatever. We're doing a live episode with Lucy Midnight Hardy for her book, Water Shall Refuse Them. I mentioned earlier with Lanny about, like, the kind of rise of folk in horror narratives. And this is that, but it's also this kind of obsessive book about a coming-of-age novel about a girl in the height of summer during a heat wave. She's, her and her family have moved to a tiny village, and they're having difficulties settling in. It kind of makes me think of Lord of the Flies. Is that what I mean? No, scrap that. Makes me think of the Wasp Factory. A different kind of winged insect.
Yep.
Meets the girls.
Oh, cool.
Right? Sounds, like,
yeah.
Summer, weird friendships that are a little bit sexy. Everything's a bit off kilter. There's a lot of bones. Next. Your turn.
I just, in light of your most recent pick, I actually swapped out. I was struggling between two books. And I decided to go for the one that I had originally not gone for, which is The Loney by Michael Patrick Hurley.
Ooh!
Because I reread it this year, and I just think it's amazing. And when you told me about Water Shall Refuse Them, I thought, oh, that sounds kind of like The Loney. And then I looked at my copy, once I got a copy of the book, he has given a little quote on the cover, so I feel like they are probably thematically quite similar.
Yeah, yeah.
And The Loney is set kind of in the, I can't remember if it's like late 70s, early 80s, and revolves around this boy and his brother, and they go on like a trip with their church and the new priest, Father Bernard, and their awful mother they kind of go on this annual trip to this part of Lancashire, and this house, and it's not a particularly kind of plot heavy book, but it's just so wild and entrancing, and I love it, and I loved it when I read it, and I've thought about it so much ever since I read it, and I listened to it on audiobook this year, and it's just as good as I remember it. And I feel like it has a lot of similar themes to Water Shall Refuse Them, in that it's not really about magic so much as like ritual and weird English things. And
that's the thing, is it, like, Water Shall Refuse Them is not really a witchy book.
Yeah,
but of course it is. If you read it, you'll learn that it is a witch book, but that's not the biggest theme. The biggest theme is ritual.
Yeah, whether that's like religion, like in the Loni, or like kind of Satan, you know, there is like satanic elements in the Loni as well. It's just such a like weird book, while being quite quiet. And yeah, if you didn't read it when it came out, I would really recommend giving it a go now.
So I did start it when it came out, and then I was going on holiday to the south of France, and I just knew in my little heart it was not the right book to read in 35 yeah, degree no. heat.
It's a kind of green
cicadas
book. It's a like
wearing.
Yeah, it's a damp green book.
I love that. Okay, my next one is Paul Takes the Form of a Mortal Girl by Andrea Lawler. We haven't talked about this.
We've never talked about this on the pod.
But we personally have talked about it, which is what's confusing me. Have you read this?
I started reading it, and then I had to give it to my husband because he left his book in one of the hotels on honeymoon.
Fuck's sake.
I know.
He drives me insane.
Paul Takes the Form of a Mortal Book Thief. My husband's name is Paul. Continue.
So this is about a shapeshifter called Paul who can change his body at will. And he basically takes himself across America from the East Coast to the West Coast on various adventures. His primary goal is just shagging. He loves attractive people and he loves to get laid.
Who doesn't?
He sleeps with men, he sleeps with women, he sleeps with men as a man, he sleeps with men as a woman, he sleeps with women as a woman, and I believe he also sleeps with women as a man. But yeah, it's just fucking great. I really enjoyed kind of seeing, it's set in the 90s, and so seeing like this 90s American queer culture through so many different lenses and so many different guises. Like, he goes to punk gigs and like student house parties. He goes to a lesbian music festival. He goes to leather bars. He kind of explores so many different queer spaces. And it's just such a kind of interesting, joyful, sexual, playful way of writing about queer culture. I just think it's an essential read for everyone.
I will definitely get to it. I'm looking forward to it.
You will, man. I think it took me a long time to get to it because, truthfully, it looked quite chunky.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I'm reading something that's not for the pod, I kind of want to read stuff that I'm going to get through quite quickly because I never know when an event is going to come up or I'm going to have to read something for review or I'm going to have to read something for the pod.
So it's quite a commitment to take on.
Yeah, like, I just worry that I'll have to put it down to read something else and then I won't pick it back up again. But it is just such a good time. Like, it's not as literary as I expected it to be because it's got, you know, the authors on the cover were, like, Maggie Nelson, Michelle T, I forget who else, but people who I associate with, you know, theory.
Yeah.
And who, although they're, like, Maggie Nelson's writing is clear as a bell, but, you know, she's super intelligent and, like, writes about kind of quite, she quite, kind of intellectualizes the world around her. And that put me off because I thought that I would have to really use the old noggin. But it's actually a much more accessible, readable kind of plot and writing style than I was expecting. So yeah, 10 out of 10. Love it.
I would definitely get to it. So my next one was a book that I kept hearing from all the discerning literary ladies that I follow, that they're all obsessed with these books. I'd never read them, hadn't really heard people talking about them outside of, like, the ladies of Twitter. And it is The Light Years by Elizabeth Jane Howard.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I bought it when I was in the LRB bookshop, partly because I feel like Gail, who works in the bookshop, was one of the people that I'd seen talking about it. And I just loved it. It's about this kind of family of three brothers in the 1930s, just before the Second World War, who are all kind of variously impacted by the First World War. They all have wives, they all have children, various other kind of characters. It's one of those books that has a family tree in the beginning, and I really needed it to start with. And it's just not the kind of book I normally read. But I read it when I was extremely stressed. I had like a very stressful time and it was just so perfect. It was just such a like absorbing read. I loved it. And I will definitely read the rest of them, but I know they are quite sad. The first one, even though nothing like super catastrophic happens, I just found it's written in such a kind of sympathetic way. I really like felt for the characters in a way that I might not normally. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. And just adored it. And everyone was right.
It's funny because I'm very familiar with those books because they're very chunky.
Yeah.
And every bookshop will always have at least the Light Years in stock. And I always think they look like an absolute snooze fest.
Yeah. They have really badly, like the cover of the Picador classic that I have is like pale green and has two deck chairs on it or something. And it just looks really like unchallenging pedestrian, like English bullshit. But like it's just so amazing. And I think it helps that it was written in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So it can kind of deal with the more like, I don't know. There's some wild children noises happening outside.
If you can hear some screaming, it's because it's not a beautiful summer's day and therefore the children are out having a howl.
Yes. I think maybe because it is not... because it has the benefit of being written more in a more modern time, it can talk about various things that maybe if it was written in the 1930s would not have been dealt with. So... it's so much more interesting than I ever thought it was going to be. It's so much more, like, psychologically intense and, like, emotionally intense. It's just a really, really wonderful book.
My next one is one that we literally just discussed. All my books have been pod favs. Supper Club by Laura Williams. Go Love listen it. To the app.
Yeah, just listen to
I'm
the last
episode.
I'm not
going to say anything about it, just go listen.
Yeah, head back to the previous episode, listen to our chat about Supper Club, go forth, buy it, basically. So my next one, while we are talking about contemporary writings about the past, as well you know, I had the absolute joy of rereading Crimson Petal and the White by Michelle Faber for our episode that we did with the absolutely wonderful Elizabeth McNeil, whose book The Doll Factory, the only reason that is not on this list is because we read it last year.
Yep.
So for that episode, I had the wonderful excuse of rereading Crimson Petal and the White, which I just think is one of the best books I've ever read in my whole life. I smile when I think about it. I think it is just hilarious and fun and weird and sad. I love it, love it, love it. Love it.
I love it too. I didn't reread it for the aforementioned time reasons.
Yeah.
And I feel like when it's time for me to reread A Crimson Petal, I will know that it's time to reread it. And I will with joy and, with a song in my heart. But 2019 wasn't the year.
Yeah. But I think, if you're looking for a chunky book, if you're going on a holiday and you think, you know what, I'm going to use this time to read a chunky book, but I don't want that chunky book to be boring, that you can literally do no better. It is just so much fun.
I feel like there are two types of holiday readers. There are people who want to get, like, bang for their suitcase buck and go for, like, the chunky monkeys. And then there are people like me who want to try and read a whole book a day.
Yeah. I just want to
knock as much off my, like, TBR as possible.
You want a thriller by the pool?
Yeah. Not necessarily, actually, but I just want something I know I can finish within a day.
I always feel more inclined to read thrillers in a day because I want to know what happened.
Same.
I'm incentivised. What's your next pick?
It's my last one now because I did two in a row.
Yes, you did.
Because I'm a greedy little monkey. My last one is one of the only other... Oh no, I suppose I've got two other backlist. Anyway, backlist book. It's Goodbye Vitamin by Rachel Kong, which I read on the Kindle relatively recently. And I just loved it so much. I don't understand why I didn't read it first time around. It's a diary of a woman who returns home when her father's dementia reaches a point that, he's starting to decline. So she goes home to help her mother and spend a year with him. It's interspersed with scraps of his diary from when she was born. And it is just so short and sharp and devastating, and it's so beautiful and a bit messy and fun at the same time. I just absolutely loved it.
And how old is it? When did it come
out? This is like 2 years old, I think, 2016.
Interesting.
Have you heard of it?
I'd heard of it, yeah. And the news this week was that it is being adapted with Constance Wu from Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, if you like being ahead of trends, read it now. Yeah. Don't wait for the adaptation to come out.
But it really is like a 3-hour read, 2-hour read. Like, it's super quick and just great. I had such a good time reading it, even though I've also found it really, like, you know, emotionally poignant. But it didn't leave me with, like, a lasting melancholy, you know?
I will read this. I feel like I will 100% definitely enjoy
You'll
it.
You'll love it, mate.
So I have two in a row now, because you've wrapped up. One of mine is nonfiction, and that is The Five by Hallie Reubenhold, which we've talked about before.
Probably. Yeah, wait, it's because every time at the end of an episode we say, what are you reading right now?
And I'm like, I'm still...
We were both, we both listened to it on audio. And it's only like a 5-hour long book, but it just took me
It took me like 2 days,
years.
And it took me about 6 months.
Because I only listened to like 10 minutes at a time. I'm busy.
And it's about the 5 canonical victims of Jack the Ripper, and not about Jack the Ripper at all. It's only about the victims, and it shines new light on that story to the extent to which all Ripperologists hate Hallie Reubenhold.
Oh, they hate her.
Because she's done something useful.
It's because all Ripperologists are useless old men.
Yeah, basically.
Set it on record.
We hate them all. We hate the Ripperologists. So yeah, if you want a really fascinating non-fiction book, that is the one, in my opinion. And my final pick is one that I would ordinarily not go on the record about, because I have reservations about the author, but we wanted this to be an honest list, and it really is one of the best books I've read this year, and that is A Ladder to the Sky by John Boyne. John Boyne, who you may either know for writing The Ethically Dubious Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, or for the ethically dubious YA book about a trans... someone with a trans sibling. I don't even know what this book is called. My name is...
brother's name is Jessica.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So basically, he has a bit of a track record of taking on stories and issues that he probably shouldn't. And I think, I basically... would not recommend in general those books, but I just love this book so much. It is about...
So how did you come to read it?
I came to read it because my dad read it and was like, this is one of the best books I've read this year. I really think you'd enjoy it. That's how I came to read it. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to see. And if I don't like it, I don't have to read it. But I loved it. And it is about a young man... So it's in, like, kind of three... It's in a few parts, and all the parts are told by... Or... it's each part is basically about this one young man, his experiences with a few different people that he comes across in his life. He is a young, aspiring writer who is ambitious literally to a fault, and will do anything to have books published. It's just, it's basically The Talented Mr. Ripley meets publishing.
I mean, that sounds so good.
Yes, it is so good. It is just, he's awful. He's really one of the most, like, despicable main characters I have ever read.
I honestly then thought you were talking about John Boyne, and I was like, wow.
No, I don't know the man, but I do know the guy in A Ladder to the Sky, and he's just, like, extraordinarily... calculating and will literally stop at nothing to achieve fame and fortune with his literary career, and that literally goes right to the top. I don't want to spoil it, but basically, if you like The Talented Mr. Ripley, there is no way you will not enjoy this book. I loved it in it. I think that's what I find so annoying about the John Boyne situation, is that he's clearly an incredible writer, and I wish he just turned his laser beam onto stories like this that I read and think, yes, that is exactly the story you should be telling, rather than things about trans teens and then apologising to Graham Linehan rather than to all trans people ever.
Did he apologise to Graham Linehan? I thought he said to Graham Linehan, just to be clear, I have absolutely nothing in common with you. I do not respect your views.
No, that was John Ronson.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Getting all my Johns confused.
Yes, so John Ronson is now the chill dude.
Okay.
John Boyne basically wrote an article defending his right to write this book about, like, a young trans person, and then apologise to Graham Linehan for, like, dragging him into it, rather than, you know, the people he should have been apologising to. So basically there are a lot of reasons why I was not hyped about reading this book, but I, now that I've read it, I cannot unread it, and I cannot not recommend it, because it is so good. Yeah. A really fun, horrible ride. If I feel like if you like things like Skin Deep by Liz Nugent, which are, like, you know, really beautifully written books about horrible people, this is exactly the book for
Delicious.
You. So tell me about a memorable... So basically that's all of our top 10s.
That's it. That's the top 10.
Tell me about a memorable summer reading experience that you've had in your life, because I bet you've had one. You love to read.
So I do have...
And
so
you love remembering things.
I feel... I do love to remember.
Unlike me, who never remembers anything.
So I feel like this question comes up a lot on Twitter, and I actually only really have a couple.
Was it the time that you definitely read On the Road by Jack Kerouac?
That fictional memory. It's very dear to my heart. If you want to hear that story, you need to listen to our episode, the episode of Hello Friend.
Yes, the origin of this podcast.
Pod, my little guest appearance on that, I tell a hilarious story.
That I've never forgotten.
Thank you.
Of all the things I have forgotten. But yeah, that was the origin of this podcast. So, you know, if you never listened to the episode of Hello Friend, where I chat to Alice, and you, if you ever wondered where babies come from, and by that I mean where this podcast came from, you will find out.
So my memorable summer reading experiences. Yeah, so as a kid, I was a passionate rereader. I guess, like most kids, like, you have the books you have, so you reread them all the time, like, just like you watch the same VHSs over and over again. Which is why I know every word to There's Something About Mary off by heart, even though I haven't watched that movie in, like, 10 years. So I remember going on a camping holiday. All of our summer holidays as children were in the UK, pretty much. I think we went to France a couple of times. But my aunt and uncle had a caravan. I remember being in the camper van, like, sat in the back seat, which is, like, a super comfy little, like, chair, reading this book called Jacqueline Hyde, which is a kind of retelling of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, about a teenage girl, and I just loved it.
Who's it by? I recognise
Robert
this.
Swindle.
Okay.
And he's someone who just has disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, his Stone Cold, I think, is the only book that you're likely to see in a bookshop, if any. But he used to have, like, he wrote quite a few, and I read loads of them. So yeah, I have, like, fond memories of that book. I remember eating a piece of licorice and accidentally staining the page with a little brown thumbprint, and subsequent rereadings of it. And in fact, I reread it a couple of years ago when I was thinking about writing something about YA of yesterday. Yeah, I found my little brown thumbprint.
Licorice stain.
So like that.
Cute.
And then a later memory was being 16 on my first, like, summer holiday abroad. You know, like, beach holiday. My dad took my brother and I to Corfu, and I read Jane Eyre. Which I don't know why I picked Jane Eyre.
That's a very random choice.
Yeah, but I think that was, like, I think it's special to me because it just did not fit in at all with the surroundings. But I remember lying on my bed and in, like, this, like, air-conditioned Greek hotel room, reading this, like, chunky classic. And it was the first time I remember picking up a classic off my own back.
Yeah.
And reading it.
Was it good?
Yeah, I fucking loved it. And again, I think, like, you know, when you're a kid, you just assume that all grown-up books are boring.
Yeah.
And, you know, 16 now, I mean, it's kind of... YA didn't exist, so you're either reading...
Children's books.
Kids' books, like Jacqueline Wilson, or you're reading from the adult section. There wasn't much in between.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was, like, my first, like, jump into classics. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
No regrets.
What about you?
Because I don't remember anything.
She has no memories.
I have no memories. But I would actually say that last summer was, like... Remember last summer when there was the heatwave? That happened at the same time as the World Cup.
Certainly did.
So it was, like, mad hot nationalism. I read... back to back, all four books in the Red Riding Quartet by David Peace. And it was literally the perfect... Because they are like a wild fever dream that have like a lot of kind of vintage racism and like police corruption and a lot of like the bad side of England.
Yeah.
You know, like really the kind of darkest, horriblest parts of like police corruption and I don't know. So reading that during the heat wave, which was so hot, you know, it was bad, and it was bad for a long time. I feel like that is truly like a perfect storm of reading situation and reading material. But yeah, I have no regrets about reading them back to back.
I love that your memory is from last year.
Yeah. But I feel like even in years to come, I'll be like, yes, that was the perfect. Because I feel like, you know, it was just ideal. Reading these very, like, weird, feverish books in a period where I couldn't really sleep because it was so hot. And just, like, everything was kind of wild and frantic because of the heat and the World Cup. And, yeah.
And Love Island, obviously.
And Love Island, which I don't watch, but you cannot escape. That even though it was only last year, I'm sure in 10 years' time, that will still be my memory. Well.
Okay, that's enough of that.
I feel like we've chatted extensively. Before I sign off, I know that I plugged it last episode, but I'm just going to say one more time that in August, I am going on some little jollies to... She's done a book. The book is No Big Deal by me, Bethany Rutter, but I'm going on some little adventures to, at the time of recording, the confirmed ones are Blackwell's in Oxford. I'm going to Waterstones in Birmingham, Waterstones in Liverpool, Waterstones in Newcastle. I'm doing the Feminist Book Club at Waterstones Gower Street. Please just look them up if you want to know the dates or how to get tickets. So please join me for those. It will be nice to see some friendly faces and meet some people that I have not met before. Alice, you got any last words before we break up for the summer?
No. Just keep on reading, pals.
Keep reading, keep tweeting.
Please
us.
Please don't forget about us. Add us in if you read anything great over the summer. And we'll see you in the autumn for more fabulous book content.
Freshly sharpened pencils season.
Bye! Bye.